Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Morning, welcome. A beautiful weather in Johannesburg. It was very cold this morning, but it's warming up tomorrow as well. So please be prepared, dress warm tomorrow. Shabbat comes in this evening, of course, 5:07. The Shabbat, Motzei Shabbat, 5:58. And the Parsha is Korach. We have in the studio this morning Dr. Jonathan Moch. And this morning we're going to talk about humility and other subjects as well. So morning, Jonathan, and how are you today?
Good morning. Good morning. Once again, it's a fine day. I'm not quite sure how cold it was this morning because I felt quite warm.
It was.
We're not having our winter that we had 3 or 4 years ago with frost. But anyway, be it as may, at this moment, I'm looking out the window. It's blue skies. There's not a drop of wind. And I think we can have a lovely day. Enjoy the weather. I look forward to this shift in content today. You want to speak about humility?
Yes.
And the opposite, of course, is arrogance.
Arrogance.
And that we must also talk about.
Right.
And we know that maybe to kick start it is that Moshe Rabbeinu, it's written in the Torah that he was the most humble of all men. But it's interesting that if he wrote the Torah, he wrote, I was the most humble of all men. Of course, there's a different aspect to that. But he's our benchmark. Moshe Rabbeinu is our benchmark of what humility is about.
Right. The reason why I thought about this subject is the other day on Kathy's morning show, they were talking to a doctor about the Ramban's letter. Now, I'm sure many of you have seen it or read it. I'm just going to read the introduction to it, and then we'll talk about humility. And I'll also tell you quite a few stories, anecdotes of people that I've met and their humility.
Yeah.
Now, the Rambam's letter starts as follows. Heed, my son, the discipline of your father, and do not forsake the guidance of your mother. Accustom yourself to speak gently to all people at all times. This will protect you from anger, a most serious character flaw, which causes one to sin. Our rabbis taught, whoever flares up in anger is subject to the discipline of Gehinnom, as it is written, banish anger from your heart and remove evil from your flesh. The evil mentioned here refers to Gehinnom, and as it is written, and the wicked are destined for the day of evil. Now, humility. I'm going to tell you a few stories in a few moments. And have you got anything to add?
You did mention the word anger.
Yeah.
And that's one of the most difficult emotions. If you're blessed without the genes for anger, that's a great bracha. But there's very few people that go through life where there's no trigger or button being pushed. And you know, I had conversations with Rabbi Twersky, Avraham Twersky, about this. And, you know, the psychiatrist, he looked over so many people with addictions, and he basically says we can't control the trigger that's pulled, you know, with the button that's pushed, but we can control our response to that trigger. And last year, some really interesting research came out of the United States, where they found that if someone's trigger is pushed or someone's button is pushed for anger, it should not last more than 90 seconds. In other words, the wave that goes through you, if it goes on for more than 90 seconds, you're actually feeding it. You're getting historical. You're adding fuel to the fire. In other words, if the trigger is pushed, if you just watch it, as it were, mindfully, for a minute or so, it should just disappear. And this is intimately related to what the Ramban is saying, is that arrogance and anger often are they marry to each other. Right. It's like a horse and carriage. And a lot of anger is not because their button's being pushed, it's because of their arrogance. Yeah, so when I've read that letter many, many times to myself, And that anger always stands out. You know, that he starts off with that.
Right.
You must get rid of anger. In other words, we must control it. We must control our response to anger.
Right.
Because Moshe Rabbeinu also got angry at times. He got angry with Hashem.
Hashem, correct.
Some of the greatest conversations ever written is in the Chumash between Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashem. Yeah.
Right. You know, there's a new thing that we have now, which we didn't have years ago. I don't know, in Johannesburg or other cities, it's called road rage.
Yes.
You know, all of a sudden now you're driving and you become very cross and anger because these taxis are overtaking you, or they go through a red robot or something like that. But about 10 or 15 years ago, you never knew that. You'd never heard of it.
There's been road rage.
But not like that.
Well, you know, I think... We're learning to control our road rage, because I wouldn't suggest people take on a taxi driver.
Right.
You know, we talk about rage, and I think what's much more problematic is not so much road rage, but rage in the home, domestic violence, the amount of rage that goes on behind closed doors. In the public, you know, you don't know who you if, but when it's a loved one, and you know they'll just absorb it, and we'll cry a bit and we'll make up tomorrow. I think that's where a lot of rage, violence is actually in the domestic home. And it's going a little bit into institutions and corporations. But if you had to look at the statistics, I think that's where it's increasing. That's where it's increasing, is actually in the home.
Right.
Because people are frustrated, the economy is down, there's a lot of stresses at multiple levels, and it just comes out. Mm. In fact, they show that in countries where the economy goes down, violence goes up. That's a clear statistic, clear. When the economy is down, it comes out as anger.
As anger, right.
People are stressed. You know, if you don't have money to pay for basics, you know, you... What do? You cook and you worry and you can't do anything, so you get frustrated, irritable, and anxious. And actually, from the brain point of view, I read this the last couple of weeks, is that there's a part of the brain called the amygdala. The amygdala is like where fear and anxiety lies. So when you frighten, that part of the brain lights up, but it's also very close to aggression.
Right.
It's an anxiety. When you're anxious, a lot of people become aggressive, and they show that people are aggressive, that area called the amygdala also lights up.
Right.
Or certain parts of it.
Well, I mean, the past few weeks, months, the child abuse and the abuse against women is unbelievable that's been taking place.
Yeah.
You're quite right. It's all possibly to do economics as well in the home. But I also want to refer to the letter of the Rambam. I read it every single week.
Mm.
And there's one aspect I read there. Whenever you look at you're speaking to someone, never look at him directly to his eyes and look down. Now, I had the experience with one gentleman, and I don't know if any of you have ever met him or spoken to him, but he is the most, you won't believe it, most humble, one of the most humble I've met. And that is Prince Buthelezi. Remember the leader of the IFP?
Mangosuthu.
Mangosuthu, the leader was Gacha Buthelezi.
Okay.
Now, every time I met him,
yes,
he would never look at you directly into your eyes.
Mm.
And he would look down at the floor. And, you know, that is how humble he was.
Yeah, you know, this is open to interpretation, because it's a definite culture thing.
It's a culture.
Because there's other cultures. I think in our culture that we live in, that if you look away, it seems like you're disinterested.
Correct.
In the Western world, and many Jews, we look at, I'm looking at you in your eye, at your eyes. If I looked away, it would come across that I'm not interested.
Correct.
But there's definitely within, I think the Zulu, I'm open to correction here, is in Asian, is you don't look people in the eye. But the eye gives the most away. The eyes
Correct.
Give the most away.
Right.
They were doing facial identification. You know, that's what's going to happen. I think there's going to be no passports or whatever. It's just going to be eventually you just go through and it's facial recognition.
Right.
Because the face gives away hundreds of thousands of unique features when it's combined.
Right.
But, sometimes... people say, look me in the eye now, you know.
Yeah.
but if you are in that culture, it's interesting. And it is to look down, and you look a person in the eye.
Yeah.
So I take groups every day, and it's multicultural.
Right.
And I have to be very, very careful on cultural differences, because what might be normal between me and, say, person A might be anti-cultural with person B.
Yeah.
So, yep.
And then, yes, and also, when I spoke to him, the way he responds, he spoke very gently, never ever raised his voice, or it's very gently, and this is in the Rambam's letter. When you speak to somebody,
yes,
speak gently to them. Don't look them in the eye. Look down. We must know what's above you and where you are as well. This is something that's come across.
So that's a mindset. In other words, that we you know, it leads into this whole very interesting aspect of hubris, of arrogance. You know, the narcissist. You know, Donald Trump has raised this issue, narcissism, this arrogance, and it seems like politics, especially in the West, has become quite arrogant, and we're getting it here now as well. There's very little respect. But on the hand, what happens when you start speaking softly to someone and they're not listening? And the only way they might listen is when you raise your voice. And I think with if you're using Moshe Rabbeinu, there is times when you can control your anger and raise your voice at the right time. For example, if you're bringing up children, and you're walking along the pavement, and they rush into the road, and they don't look left and right. I think that deserves a bit of anger, a bit of shot, because if you don't teach them, then there might be a fatality.
Right.
So we can't just say extinguish anger. It's about controlling it.
Controlling
it. And directing it. And bring it out at the right time and the right place, right person, which is almost impossible, but at least we can attempt to try for this. I worry, on the other hand, this is now my psychiatrist hat on, when people hold it in because they take this humility to the extreme. When Shmuel said, don't be small in your own eyes, you know, because he said, I don't want to kill, I want to keep the, you know, when he came back from, didn't finish off Amalek. And that is the negative side of low self-esteem.
Right. We're going to, in a few moments, take a break. I just want to give you one more quote from the Rambam's letter. Once you have distanced yourself from anger, the quality of humility will enter your heart. So we're taking a break. We'll be back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
So we're talking about humility, and I mentioned about looking at a person in his eye and looking down. Now, I just want to also tell you an anecdote about humility. There were two very great gedolim in America. The one was the Reb Moshe Feinstein, and the other one was Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky. And they died within 3 weeks of each other in 1986. And I want to tell you about Rabbi Kamenetsky. Rabbi Kamenetsky was the Rosh of a yeshiva, and about a few blocks away from the yeshiva was a convent. And after the davening in the morning, he would have a safe in his hand and would go for a walk just to get a breath of fresh air. And he'd walk around and come back a half an hour later or so. And after he died, a couple of days later, the mother superior of the convent came to the yeshiva. And she asked one of them there, where is that rabbi who walks around the block and comes to every morning? They said, no, he passed away. So the person this lady, the mother superior, spoke to, said, why do you ask? Said, well, you know that he used to come past our convent and used to greet every one of our nuns, and he knew their first names. And he did this for many, many years. Now that is a sign of humility, that he didn't distinguish who they were, what they were, but he saw them outside, and he would say good morning to them, and ask them their names and wish them a good day. So that is one of the greats that I can quote.
Yes.
But there'll be some more in a few moments as well.
There's Nelson Mandela, of course, and there was a tribute, I think, on his 90th. I don't know if you saw that magazine. The Chief Rabbi Harris with his talis on, I think on Inauguration Day. But he was remarkable. There were many stories. There was one that he went to a Jewish wedding at the Carlton Hotel. And for security reasons, he couldn't come through the main lobby, so he went through the kitchen. But he stopped at everybody in that kitchen, everyone. And usually those are the staff
that
got the terrible jobs of washing dishes all day long. That's all they do all day long. He stopped with everyone and said, "Hello, how are you? What's your name? How are things going?" And he didn't have to come in like in a grand parade in his limousines and everybody, the crowds are there. Great. He came through the back. He didn't just rush through to get the limelight. He honored everybody. And, if we look at this from a different point of view, is humility. From Jonathan Sacks, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, is that it's making space for the other. When the ego is too big, and we're talking when your self-importance is too big, there's no space for anyone else. And this is the essence of humility. And although Moshe Rabbeinu got angry, and this week's Parsha Korach, and it was a major, major conflict, and it ended up as a tragedy that the ground opened up, and there were 250, and even the Jews often murmured, "Who are you to do this?" And he still kept his poise. He had his vision, and he still had that humility to allow people in. And this is to me a practical way: is how do you keep yourself empty? Or empty space for others. And I've got some interesting articles. And just by the way, I had a really good week this week because my website's really going on, and we managed to get into Apple Store, the app, and into Google Store, and it's absolutely free. So anybody here can just go to Apple Store. The code name is Flip365, like flipping a coin. Frontal Lobel Integrity Project 365. How many days of the year? Can do it. And there's some. I pick up some lovely, interesting articles, and I post every day. It's free, and it's a continuation of these conversations, for example. But I picked up some really interesting scientific articles on this. Is written, for example, called the Hubris Syndrome. And do you remember who David Owen was?
David Owen rings a bell.
Okay, he's a British man. He was the Minister of Foreign Affairs and whatever.
Correct.
And he went a bit into academia, and he and a fellow researcher looked at a study of United States presidents and United Kingdom prime ministers over the last 100 years. This was until the end of Tony Blair, so it's not the current crop of Obama and Trump. And the argument is, which is quite interesting, is that when some people get into power, positional power, chief executive officer, prime minister, they can become very arrogant and abuse that power. And when they're out of power, it seems like it drifts away. But interestingly, written in the Atlantic Monthly, there is research to show that these men, some of them women, like Margaret Thatcher and others, they develop a change in their brain structures. It's almost like they have a traumatic brain injury. So it's not just, up in the air. And this is what power can do. Power for certain people can make them very arrogant. And, they can get on the phone and they say, "Do you know who you are speaking to?" just because of my position, do you know who you're speaking to? And it ultimately ends in tears, because there's not a way to lead through arrogance. Leadership needs that humility, that ability to give space to others. And that's what we have to do on a daily basis. And from a Jewish, Barney Hurwitz, who created
the net care.
He was very close to my father, and he said when he was building his wealth to become get back to humility, he went back to his pharmacy, High Street.
He started Highbury Pharmacy.
Highbury Pharmacy, yeah. And he just did for a few hours, just, you know, dispensing medication, just basic dispensing. And he also used to come at 11, I was at Milpok at 11 o'clock at night. Just walked in just to see how things were going. He didn't say, I'm Barney Hewitts and I own this place. He just wanted to see how the nurses, how the patients were. He went up to patients, how are you doing? Didn't have to say, well, I'm the founder of this and I'm worth that. And I found that was a good lesson.
I'll give you another example. Donald Gordon.
Yes.
The founder of Liberty Life.
Yes.
He would come to work every morning about 5 o'clock in the morning and go through every insurance policy that had been issued the day before.
Yes.
To check to see that it was done correctly.
Yes.
And everything was, you know, in proper order.
Mm.
And that showed humility as well. And if there was something wrong, he would call in the agent or the whoever sold the policy and contact the client and apologize. Like, that is how he built his business.
Yeah, yeah. The Rabbonim, or the lady, you know, and a lot of lady Jewish lay leaders. I mean, the city is famous for its civil society organizations. Who comes to mind?
I'll tell you who comes to mind. The most, to me, I would call him the Melech HaKesed, and that was the late Sami Jackson. I'm sure many of you remember. Mm. He was the secretary of the Chevre Kadisha for years.
Mm.
You know, he was demobbed from the army in 1945. He was looking for a job. He was walking around in Market Street.
Yes.
And the Chevre Kadisha had a small little office there. And he walked in there and he spoke to them. They offered him a job as a secretary. But he had such chesed, such humility, you have never, ever experienced.
Examples?
You know, to help people, and nobody would know about, or go to their homes and arrange food parcels for them, and the list is endless. But I'll tell you about Rabbi Alloy as well, humility as well. We're taking a break. We'll be back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
The year is 1914. When medical student Michael Bogosyan arrives in the cosmopolitan Turkish capital, Constantinople, he meets Anna, and their shared Armenian heritage sparks an immediate attraction. With the mighty Ottoman Empire crumbling in the Great War, Constantinople is on the verge of chaos. As the Turks form an alliance with Germany and the empire turns violently against its own ethnic minorities, Michael and Anna must join forces to survive. Promises are made and promises are broken. The one promise that must be kept is to live on and tell the story. Directed by Terry George, director of Hotel Rwanda, The Promise stars Oscar Isaac, Charlotte Le Bon, and Academy Award winner Christian Bale, and releases at select cinemas on Friday, the 23rd of June. So we're talking about humility, and I mentioned the story about Chief Gacha Buthelezi, Rabbi Kamenetsky, and I'm going to tell you a story in a few moments about the late Rabbi Aaron. To me, one of the most humble people I'd ever met.
Yes. Yeah. You know, humility and chesed, we must be careful that they're not the same. A person can be full of chesed, but not necessarily humble. And you can be humble, but you're not necessarily chesed.
But Sami Jackson was both humble and full
of chesed. So to combine the two of humility and kindness is remarkable. And humility is, just to clear this up, it's not low self-esteem. It's, yes, I know who I am, but I've got so much more to give and to do. And people with low self-esteem, actually, it's a form of arrogance, because they protect themselves. They don't want to fail. They don't want to give too much of themselves, because they think that they're losing. But, you know, humility is a bit like a candle. Is, you know, you light one. If your candle's lit, you light another one. You don't really lose from that. And, you know, the Kotzker Rebbe, he was asked, where's God? And by his Talmidim, and he says, wherever you allow God in. And that has stayed with me for about 30 years, that, you know, when you're arrogant, there's no place for God. I think there's a Gomorrah on this. God says to, you know, this person, there's no space for the two of us. Arrogance and narcissism are very difficult people to live with and to deal with it. You know, especially when it comes to positional power, I've always moved away from positions because, you know, when you get a position, I mean, a psychiatrist is a position, and I try to downplay that as much as possible. You know, so there's, on the one hand, we have to understand it, but this is a program where we have lots of stories to prove the point. So tell me about Rabbi Eloy.
Rabbi, tell you Rabbi Eloy. Rabbi Eloy, when it came to the end of the year for the festive season, he used a bank. The regional banking was in town. You know, in Yeovil, it only came later on. He used a bank with what they called Barclays Bank, which was corner Jeppy and Rissick Street. I remember it well because I used to take him. He would come at the end of the year, and he would bring what we call Christmas gifts to every one of the staff, whether it was the cleaner or was the security guard outside. He would go to every single one of them, shake their hands, and wish them a very happy holiday and a new year.
Yeah.
Every single one. But it wasn't only for that. He went to other institutions where he knew them all. He made sure that he gave every single one a gift. And then later on in years, when it was they moved to Yeovil, the banks, he went the Nedbank, the same thing, the cleaning staff, or even FNB it became, or Standard Bank, wherever I took him. But not only that, there was he was so humble. He had a maid called Julia who looked after him. He stayed in a building called Wakenshaw. I'm sure many of you remember there in Berea, near the Berea Shul. And she was taken ill, and she was taken to the old Joburg Gin across the road, the non-European hospital. But that was exactly a year before de Klerk announced the unbanning of the ANC, and there was a lot of rioting taking place, and it was very difficult times. So he said to me one day, he phoned me, he says, come, we're going. We've got to go and see Julia. I haven't heard from her. So first thing we did, we stopped off, and we bought a box of biscuits for her and some chocolates, whatever it was. And then I parked my car at the old fort, I'm sure many of you remember, which is across the road from the Lady Dudley nursing
home. The old medical school. I spent a number of years there. On Lady Dudley, Esalen Street and the Florence Nightingale.
The Florence Nightingale was
diagonally across,
Diagonally across was the maternity home, Florence Nightingale, right. So then we then walked, walking towards the old hospital, the non-European hospital, but there were thousands and thousands of Africans there, toy-toying and shouting and everything. But we managed to get through. We came to the matron. We asked her where the maid was, Julia. She said, look, she's there, but I'll only allow you for a few minutes because there's a lot of tension going on in the hospital. We went to Julia. He gave her money. He gave her the chocolates, the sweets, the biscuits. Then he said to the matron when we were about to leave, please let me know about her. He gave me his phone number. I want to, you know, keep in touch. And as the matron said, look, don't go outside. It's very dangerous. The crowd was getting very out of hand. Rabbi Eloy said, Zorg sich nicht in Yiddish. Don't worry. And we're going out. And this, I've repeated this before. And as we walked out, I'm going to quote this. This is in inverted commas. It was like the parting of the Black Sea. You know, we always talk about the Red Sea, the parting of Moshe Rabbeinu walking through.
Parting of the Black Sea.
And they just opened up.
Yes.
And one of them shouted out, Umfundisi, Umfundisi, which means a spiritual man, a priest, a religious man. And we walked through. There was absolute silence. One of them ran up to Rabbi Eloy and touched his hand. And he shook his hand.
Yeah.
And that showed absolute humility.
But strength.
Strength.
Because strength. He just had such security in his identity in and himself.
And he knew. But
now,
yeah.
that's the essence of humility.
That he had,
have strength.
He had strength, and he knew that Hashem is with him.
Yeah.
And as we walked through, and we came to my motor car, and we drove away, he said to me in Yiddish, Zognachni, the kinder, don't tell my children about this, because they'll be very, very upset that this is where the way he went. It was very dangerous in those days.
Sure.
It was terrible.
But look what he spoke about last week on Edelstein.
Edelstein as well.
Yeah, because that was a different crowd.
A different crowd.
A different response to that crowd.
But here they saw him.
But maybe he looked like a rabbi. Yes. And he was, as you said, a spiritual man.
A spiritual man. And you know, as I mentioned with Rabbi Loy, if he wanted to go somewhere and just say one of us weren't available to take him, all he would do is get a lift to Clarendon Circle. I'm sure many of you remember. Mm. He would stand in a corner and he wouldn't be offered one lift. He'd be offered hundreds.
Yes.
Everybody knew him, but so humble. And one other thing about late Rabbi Loy and his humbleness, every Friday morning he had a notebook. He would phone all the widows, or one or two widowers, and wish them all a good Shabbos.
Yes. Yes.
Unbelievable. He had time to wish everybody. And it wasn't one call. It could have been 100 calls sometimes on a Friday. He also was very involved with the Achnosis Kallah. There was a Mrs. Lesham who was very in charge of the dowries for brides. And Rabbi Loy made it his business to find out who needed it. And he would go to Mrs. Lesham and tell her, even went to the committee meetings to advise them. So, but I could go on all his humbleness.
I can add one is that I was in Golders Green in London. I was staying at the hotel there. And I come down and I see this man. I said, I know this man. And the Rabbi Alloy. I said, where are you going now? I'm taking the underground. So he must have been about 85 then. And now I've got some friends here, and I need to visit them, and they're sick, and I have to do this mitzvah. So, it wasn't just for show. It was genuine. And that's, if you're getting close to humility, a test of humility, in a sense, is that the person doesn't even know that they're humble. You know, there's that famous story, you know, we talked about being, Tachnun, and these two guys are standing there in the shul by the Rona Kodesh, and the one saying, I'm a nothing, and the other one's banging his chest and saying, I'm a nothing, and the other one's saying, I'm a nothing. One says to the other, I'm more of a nothing than you. You know what I mean? And so you get this false humility, which is a problem, because people are going on courses or whatever and they say, you know, you must be humble, whatever, but it's just on the surface, because deep down it hasn't gone into their soul. Rabbi Alloyd was at the soul level.
He loved
at the depth of him.
He loved every human being. Whether you're white, black, green, whatever it is, small child, nothing. And you know, we're taking a break in a moment. He made it his business that to visit everyone in hospital. He did funerals. He did consecrations. I remember once fetching him from the airport, and was Rabbi Chazdan's son, who was going to be the obsher in this. He was 3 years old. And we arrived. It was a Wednesday afternoon. We didn't go straight to his flat. He said, we're going straight to the obsher. He made it his business to be at every simcha for everyone. Mm. So we're taking a break. We're back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
So we're talking about humility. I've mentioned all about the late Rabbi Loy. To me, one of the greatest persons that I've ever met, the most humble I've ever met. And as I said, you know, the late Louis Rabinovitz, Chief Rabbi Rabinovitz, used to describe Rabbi Loy as a burning fire.
A cold fire.
Inside, he was burning, but outside he was cold. You wouldn't think, but he was so burning with the fervor for the Yiddishkeit and for all his fellow human beings.
Yeah, you know, hubris, arrogance is making a lot of news. But you know, I think if we looked at it through a statistical eye, I would say that the majority of people lean towards humility. You know, making space for others, and it goes on in the home. You know, looking after your parents, those with children with special needs. So if we just maybe just sum up by saying this, that we bring it down the different levels, that it starts with Hashem, God. The Kabbalists tell us that God created the world through a process called Tzimtzum, which he had to withdraw. He had to create space for other. The Kotzke Rebbe, as I said, you know, where's God is where you allow God in. And where's humility? Humility is creating space for others. And you gave these examples of Rabbi Eloy creating space for others. You know, even that idea of him not driving a car and getting lifts, I had a few times, just maybe three or four times, that I was in the car with him. And what an experience. I still remember it. And, you know, he used to go to the Yeshiva Gedola when he stayed at the Kerstaks or the Gararis. And there I met somebody who knew him very well. And for 8 years, because he had a bad eyesight towards the end of it, and it was a bit of a bumpy road, so he used to walk him every Shabbos back to one of those homes. And he said it was the most remarkable experiences of his life. It wasn't like, well, just take me home now and just get me there. It was, who are you and how's your week been? And, you know, and that's the essence of how we can practically bring humility into our lives, is consciously listening and creating space for the other and for Hashem and maybe even for oneself. So that's my take on it. We can also go on to the other side, which is hubris and arrogance, but let's leave it at that and let's be humble for the next 5 minutes.
Right. Well, I'll end off with the following. Small is big, great is humility. Right. Just to remind you, Shabbat comes in 5:07, terminates 5:58, Rosh Chodesh tomorrow, the Pasha Korach, and after the Cantor Sunday between 4 and 5, Talk of the Town on Tuesday between 9 and 10, Reflections of the Past between 9 and 10, and go well, have a wonderful Shabbat, Chodesh Tov. Thank you, Craig, for controlling.